Podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. I am your host, Rob Cope, and with me today is my co-host, Dan Farrant, and a special intro guest, Hugh Williams.
Hello, everyone. How are you doing?
We're good. How are you, Dan?
I'm fine, thanks, Rob. You doing all right?
Yeah, everything's under control. So, Hugh, your show, the improvised agenda music. Damn it, I've even got my notes here.
Your show, give it another go, Rob. Cool.
Music agenda, improvised music agenda podcast.
That's the one.
That felt good. It turns one on March the 1st.
Oh, yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, that's on St. David's Day as well, which is kind of fitting, seeing as I'm really Welsh.
Yeah, profoundly.
Yeah, so I don't know whether to do something to celebrate that. I don't know.
But yeah, we never celebrated ours, did we, Dan?
Not really. I mean, we commiserated it, if anything.
Have you guys got plans for episode 200? No, 100. 100, isn't it?
No, it's just a lottery of whoever is free that week.
What episode are we on now?
This is 94.
Rob, I hate to break to you, but I did count, and this is actually episode 93.
What?!
I knew there was something going on with the numbers.
What do you mean, count? You went back to the start and counted every single one?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, this is episode 93.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome to the Jazz Podcast, episode 93.
So we are doing episode 93 a lot, aren't we? We are.
I've had that feeling last week.
You knew it.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Good. Is this like the Groundhog Day of podcasts?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Every week now, there's like a tear in Dan's eye when we start the call.
Oh, no.
Then around we go again.
Yeah, what word is it? You're going to regress in episodes. It's like, yeah.
We regressed a long time ago, Hugh.
Yeah. So, Hugh, what's going on? Tell us things.
So, so my agenda with jumping on your call. So, I've got a gig March the 4th at the Vortex.
Oh, we got like an anniversary of the podcast day gig.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that, but then it could, yeah. Let's say it's the anniversary of the podcast gig.
You should really beat people over the head with a stick about, you know, funding. Even have a whip round in a vortex, get people to, you know, contribute. Not that Dan and I know anything about getting people to financially contribute to a podcast.
Not a clue.
Oh, yeah, it's like best way to lose money, isn't it? It's beautiful, but yeah.
After becoming a jazz musician.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the joke goes, isn't it? How do you make £1 million in jazz? Start with £2 million.
I don't know, I heard that in a while. So what's the gig, Hugh?
So it's going to be my trio with George Crowley and John Scott. So all my tunes. So yeah, sort of pretty new material. So yeah, we recorded it in the summer with American drummer Devin Gray. So yeah, so we're kind of doing the whole book of music for that. So it's going to be fun.
Will that get released as an album at some point?
Yes, it will. I just got around to mixing it the other day with Alex Bonney.
Oh, nice.
Thank you about it. So yeah, then aside from the life of hustling for the podcast, I've got to figure out how to release music now.
Oh man, I'm in the middle of that at the moment and it's so painful.
Yeah,
I'm like, I've spent the whole day on a website that bores me to tears doing a task that bores me to tears, which I shall now bore the listeners to tears with my tedious life.
Yeah. But the admin of music, you know, so fortunately we got to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot. So anyway, let's might press play on this. I've got a couple of tracks here from Rich Jones. He's part of a duo called Hemma, and we're going to talk to Rich about his life, his violin, and check out some music.
Thank you.
Rich Jones, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. All good?
Excellent. Excellent. So, Rich, you are a jazz violinist.
Well, maybe,
yeah. Can you give us a little... we just played a track, actually. Let's start there, off of your the brand new EP, which is called Hemmer.
Yes.
We just listened to First Light, so we'll talk about it. But just give us a little backstory about your good self before we go steaming into it.
Yeah, sure. I have been in London for about eight years now, and I started playing violin in school.
Why violin?
Do you know, I try and remember why specifically, and I can't actually remember. I think it was just kind of the one that I started playing. I played a bit of piano as well, and I think my dad had played a bit of violin when he was younger, so ended up being violin and carried it through for quite a few years. Not loving it, but, you know, kept going.
Yes.
And then got to kind of A-level sort of age and decided then to go to uni. And then I went to Bath Spa University. And that was where I kind of really started to really love playing and found
out. Were you studying music?
Yeah, so it was like a really straight music course, just quite creative. So lots of different things you could do on that course. But the head of music there was kind of like, oh, you know, you do some improvising, we could get you a jazz teacher. And at that point in my sort of very small mind, I didn't even know that really jazz was an option for me on that instrument. I hadn't even thought about it.
How had you gotten into improvising then before this point?
Well, I'd had friends who had who'd played as well, and we'd kind of messed around quite a lot with playing. So it was kind of... I'd already been doing it for a few years just in that sense. So it wasn't, I hadn't had any training on it, but just, you know, playing around in a kind of jazz-ish kind of way. And Pete Lee, actually, who you know, obviously, I grew up with him. So we'd been
Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Leeds? Is that where Pete grew up?
No, Pete grew up in Cardiff as well. So
Course he did. We should, like, this is like the sequel to his show at this point.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that podcast. We did, Pete Lee is on the show in our back catalogue, but it's about 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, that was right when he did his.
Mm.
Yeah, so we grew up together and we did lots of playing together when we were kind of younger. We were improvising, but not sort of, not so much with the theory side of things and real knowledge of what we're doing. So then when we went off our separate ways to university, I had the opportunity then to study it a little bit more in depth and my mind was blown. Okay. You know, kind of discovered lots of new things. So
they fished out a jazz teacher for you?
Yeah, I mean, my teacher was, yeah, just kind of from a street in Bar. And she just came in and we did loads of kind of gypsy jazz stuff and she gave me loads of advice about different players and stuff like that. So it was really great. And I hadn't expected to have a teacher for it. I mean, even when I came to London to do my postgrad, actually, I didn't even have a specific jazz violin teacher there. I was kind of taught by lots of other staff and people. But so I was really lucky to have that teacher in Bath. And she was awesome.
The uni, like... They instigated this, not you.
Yeah, I think I'd played. I've struggled to remember exactly what happened, but I'm pretty sure me and a friend from uni did this performance together, which we kind of composed and then did it in a sort of lunchtime concert. And then I think they did have a jazz sort of little route to the course. And then after that performance, the head of the course was kind of like, oh, you know. It's possible that we could maybe find you a teacher. I think we know someone who's in the area who might be able to. So, you know, and said, are you interested in that? And I'd done one recital, my classical recital at the first sort of, I don't know, January, say, our kind of first year recital at that point. And it had gone fine. And I was like, OK, so this is what it's going to be like. And then suddenly after I'd done that, the whole course then changed for me, because I spent the next couple of years like focusing way more on the jazz side of things. But we could still do loads of other stuff, like, we, you know, I was focusing on jazz on the instrument, but then at the same time you could like do the opera module, and I ended up, you know, singing in an opera as well, which is great. So just did all sorts of things. It was really good fun.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my undergrad was similar in the sense that I wasn't majorly focused on one style of music yet. And I, for me, that worked great, actually, just sort of floating around and experimenting.
Yeah. You know? No, it was great. And I think I wouldn't have been, I definitely wasn't ready that I could have gone straight from 18 and gone to, say, music college and just focused on one thing. I hadn't discovered enough yet. I needed more time to figure out all of the different things that I liked and explore more styles and different stuff. So it was kind of the perfect route for me, because it meant that it brought all of those things together. And then as I went on after that course, a few years later, you know, I had more of an idea and understanding of what it was that I wanted to do.
Okay. So did you have a few years out between your finishing Bath? Did you go straight to London after you graduated?
No, I kind of had a strange uni progression, really. So I did 2 years in Bath, and then I had three years out, because I was playing with this was the other great thing about that course. There was the pop course, or the commercial music course. They had they kind of collaborated a little bit, and so I ended up playing in this group called Kill It Kid, and during the time that we started, we ended up getting kind of signed to an indie label, and even though it was not that long ago, that I think it was about 10 years ago now, or a little more. But yeah, back in even that day, indie labels still had some money. So we actually got quite a nice little deal, which meant we could come out of what we were doing and spend a couple of years kind of on the road and making music with that band. So that was kind of blues rock kind of stuff, which was great, because it meant there was some improvising and different stylistic stuff for the violin, which was where I was really interested. But it meant we could kind of do all of that and tour around a little bit, and be able to make a living on that without having to study at the same time. So that was kind of really great as well, to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's brilliant. What a cool like sabbatical to take from your...
Yeah.
Is it just one more year then when you came back?
Yeah, so then... I did it for about 3 years. So we kind of did our first album within that time.
Yeah.
And then as they were working towards the second album, I sort of thought, okay, I'm going to head back now. So then by that point I was really clear then what I wanted to do, because I'd spent a bit of time in that industry and seen how that worked. And I was kind of like, okay, well now I really want to come back actually and focus on the jazz side of things. So it was like a really, really clear pathway then what to do. So I went back and finished my third year at Bath Spa, and then I auditioned that year for a couple of places in London. And then I decided that Guildhall would probably be the one that would suit me best. So I went there and did their postgrad thing, which was great.
And that postgrad is half jazz, half classical. Is that true?
No. The one I did was totally classical, actually.
Oh, that's cool.
Totally jazz. Sorry, totally jazz. No classical.
that's a great mix-up. Whoa.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It was all jazz. So, and it was.
Oh, maybe it's the undergrad degree that I'm thinking of. Then
it could be. I think the undergrad at Guildhall, maybe they mix a little bit more between things. Yeah, but the postgrad was all jazz. And I did that in 1 year as well, which was. Intense. It was quite a lot to do in that 1 year, but it was the right thing, because I couldn't say, oh, I can definitely afford to be in London. It was too many unknowns, so I decided to go for it and spend that year. And then, of course, as it happened, I stayed and have been here for many years later. So yeah, it was great.
How is the transition when you come out of college into the real world?
Yeah, I did find it pretty hard, actually, the move from there, because I met some great people on the course, and a couple of whom I still play with, Jamie Lehman, guitarist, who was in that year. I'm sort of hoping to work with him a lot more on my own project over the next sort of couple of years. But a lot of the other guys from the course, we didn't do so much afterwards. So actually, when I finished there, a lot of the contacts I made and who I'm working with now were kind of through mutual people through that course and beyond that. So when I first came out, it did take me a good sort of 6 months to a year to start to just penetrate into the different areas of the jazz scene.
Yeah.
And it is hard because, of course, you need to be there to do that, and you're trying to support yourself to be there while also that all of that's happening. But yeah, it worked out really well, and I kind of met some great players. A cellist called Shirley Smart, who I started working with quite soon after, and then through her met other people. And as it all works in London, you know, you just kind of meet people in various different places, and then that's it. That's kind of how it all spreads out. So, but yeah, it was a tricky transition. I think it's not an easy thing unless you've got it all kind of mapped out and set, but I think that's even that is really hard to be able to plan that. So but yeah, no, now everything is good.
Sweet. So let's talk about the EP then.
Yeah.
So is it just, you'd think that like I'd have loads of notes and have this all figured out, but as always, that is not the way. So is it just the two of you?
Yes, it's just myself and Matt Hill. Who've kind of done everything, and Matt Hill is the sort of the brains behind all of the technological side of it. So I kind of turn up, and we have some musical ideas that we both thought about, and then I lay down all the different violin-y stuff and different string things, and then Matt's he's a composer, so he's great on kind of the, you know, all the MIDI stuff and working out the logic and everything. I mean, I'm not an expert on any of that stuff at all. So
yeah, I was really curious about that because there's some really interesting effects going on in it. It's incredibly atmospheric. It's an absolute beauty. Yeah. I wasn't sure. Have you ever done any like pedals experiments with the violin before?
Yeah, I do use some effects for various different gigs. I mean, it just depends on what I'm playing and who it's with. But yeah, I have used some different pedals before. I use a loop pedal occasionally for different things. And yeah, I have a Boss pedal that I use for kind of different kinds of reverb and delay and all that kind of thing. I mean, I haven't delved quite as far as some of the other, like Jean-Luc Ponty, people like that, who've gone well into the pedal side of things. But no, I use some pedal now and again, just depending on when it's kind of appropriate, really.
Okay. So how did this whole duo start?
Well, I'd actually been working with Matt for a little while. He still does, of course, compose for various different things. And he'd been doing some library music stuff, actually. And I'd been going around doing a couple of sessions. And it kind of come up with some really nice stuff. And I just thought, whilst this is really nice to be able to do it, and hopefully this is going to end up somewhere great and where it's heard and in a really nice scenario, I kind of thought, why don't we just compose some stuff in this kind of style? Because it kind of felt really natural. The whole feel of the music really suited, I think, both of our playing as well and ideas. So I just said to Matt, why don't we have a go at doing something, not for any specific purpose, but just for ourselves, and just come up with some music and see what happens with it. So we did just that, really. I kind of went round. We both had to think about some different ideas, and it was really nice to be composing in a really different way, where we'd have sort of ideas that we would take just like a small fragment of melody, or you know, a motif on the piano or something like that. And then we kind of took it from each other and played around with it and came up with something that we felt worked. So the whole idea of it was just to take a bit of a step back from the kind of composing that I suppose I'd be more used to, which is far more kind of in depth and detailed with regards to coming up with like a sequence and a melody or something like that. And this was far more just soundscape and atmospheric and what can we make work for the track. So yeah, it kind of all just came from there really, and just creating something for a different sort of scenario rather than just a particular kind of
I was just going to say Matt must do that a lot career.
Yeah, for sure.
Where did you record it?
We did most of it at Matt's flat, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just a great little home studio setup, nice little room with, you know, some soft stuff around the edges to stop the sound coming in and all that kind of thing. We did I think we did one of the tracks we did up in a studio in Shoreditch, just where Matt works during the week sometimes. So he had access to that at one point. But yeah, most of it was done very much in the kind of home studio surrounding, really.
Yeah. And does he mix and master it as well?
Yeah, Matt just did all of that kind
wow,
of stuff.
That's so, pretty yeah. intense.
Yeah. I mean, he's great at doing that stuff, so...
Yeah, I noticed Tom Corley has a new album coming out soon, and I think he's mixed and mastered that himself as well, which is really unusual, because it's really hard to do, you know, like a whole different skill tree to everything we've ever learned.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's a hard sort of set of skills to learn, and also to do that with your own stuff as well, to be able to... But I think it just worked out. It worked out for us. We just had the whole idea that there was no big vision with anything. It was just kind of let's make some music and then let's see what we think. And you know what we made, we really liked. So we were like, well, let's do something with it. So we kind of came up with, you know, followed the sort of order of things and came up with a name and so on. And so we ended up just releasing it and. Just through ourselves, really.
Yeah. When you go into the... Well, I say into the studio. When you're recording it... well, you did go in the studio, so let's just not dwell on my ramblings. Are you... I've distracted myself now. I've completely forgotten what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. How much of it are you writing out, then, when you're, like, done with the composition process and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to record this?
Yeah. Pretty very little. I mean, it depended on the track.
Yeah.
So, I think the tracks that Matt tended to sort of compose a little bit more. Say the initial idea. Matt would often have some stuff written down. It's maybe some guide kind of ideas of things which we would. Which we would take from. So that could be, I mean, it could be that there was a full melody, but a lot of it was not written, but like the first track, for example, The Calling, is not written at all. Like that's literally all improvised, that first one. So it was just a pedal that we'd laid down and we just did some, tried a few takes of some different playing over that. Yeah. And then a couple of others, you know, especially my ones, probably because I was a bit less organized, but I'd kind of take a melody that I'd thought about or come up with. And then we would just take that in the studio and work with it there. And actually that wasn't written at all. So it did vary between the two of us, how we worked on that. But much of it, I'd say, was probably, there was a lot less written than was written, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The violin has such a beautiful tone on this. Is that, do you play, getting into some territory I know nothing about. Do you play differently on this than you do in other styles of music? Or can you make the tone sound different? It seems just really like deep and haunting and unusual.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I suppose stylistically, from where I've ended up now, I suppose like taking a lot of influences from different players and different music, there is a sound that I I quite like, and I like to use the violin to the, well, you know, at the moment to what my fullest knowledge of its potential is. Of course, there's a lot more that the violin can do that is to be discovered for me. But like, so from what I like playing, the, you know, texturally really lightly and using some kind of effects where you're bowing a lot less heavily. Mm-hmm. So you get these effect, these kind of haunting sounds probably is what you're kind of what you're hearing. Yes. So you, there are technical things with this. And I think especially because of the way that the music has been written, and we knew that a lot of it was going to be quite ambient and quite a lot of reverb on it. So a lot of that stuff kind of fits around then the tone. You've got a bit more to play with in terms of how you can play the instrument. If of course that, you know, if you were playing that kind of dry without any sound, you'd probably need to project the sound differently.
Yeah.
And stuff. But because of the setting, you're able to use some of those techniques, lots of harmonics, just kind of playing very lightly and you playing at different areas of the violin using the bow.
Yeah.
Actually create a different sound and timbre in those bits. So yeah, definitely different to a lot of the ways I would play in different sort of scenarios and projects. But having said that, I do, there would be sounds in that I would take everywhere because they're sounds that the violin makes that I really like to kind of put into lots of different music. So yeah, so I mean, I think you'd find it in a lot of the different things I play, but more so, okay. Yeah.
I found it really interesting because the only time we've played together was like 1930s jazz, you know, quite a trad vibe, like acoustic bass, acoustic guitar, clarinet, violin. And yeah. Honestly, I think if I were, if you didn't tell me, I'm worried I wouldn't have even known this was your playing. Cause it's so interesting to hear like how much the way of course that you play is just completely different.
Yeah.
So I had another question. Oh yeah. When you're recording it, you've got headphones on.
Yeah.
Do you hear the reverb back straight away, or do you actually play it really dry and put it on later?
No, I mean, for me, I've had both of these scenarios like in different recording sessions. So for me, if I know that, then if it will have reverb on afterwards, it affects the way that I would play it. So I need to have that live sound now.
Yeah.
So for me, I like it to be as real as it's going to be for the listener, because if I know that I'm going to play a long note and then sort of slide down from that note with some harmonics, if I haven't got that full picture of the sound, I find it really difficult then to kind of think, okay, well, yeah, that'll work afterwards. That affects how I will actually play it. So yeah, I much prefer having those sounds through the earphones at the time of recording, which sometimes I know can be quite annoying because kind of sound engineers, for this it was fine because it was just the two of us, so I could be as picky as I wanted really. But, but in a lot of scenarios, you know, you've got a whole band or something and you're kind of saying, well, can you sort this bit of reverb or can you sort this bit of delay out for me or whatever. But I think for me, like, that's a really important thing, to have great sound in your earphones, how you're actually wanting it to be heard, because then you're going to play it sort of fully as you're intending it. So yeah, for me, that's a really important thing when I'm recording.
Yeah, totally. It informs the way you play so much.
One
of the hardest things I've found with recording is if you're doing, like, you know, I've done some big bands where there's five saxophones, but you share the one channel, you know? So yeah, so like sometimes you can basically can't hear yourself, or it's not enough when you're just like, all I want is loads and loads of me. Yeah, it's a funny kind of life skill to, like, playing your instrument, even like just playing with a pair of headphones on it, it doesn't feel the same.
No, that's right. It's quite different.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, it is really different to have that when you're playing through headphones, and especially when you've got other people playing through the same channel as well. You have to, you almost have to like dial down your own.
Fact, Rich, that happened to us the last time we played together.
Yes, it did.
There you go.
Yes, now I remember. Yeah. Fantastic sound, yeah.
Exactly. What more could you want than loads of me in your ears? So what else is... Have you got any plans then for the band in the near future? Or in the distant future?
Yeah, I think... So we've obviously just put out this first EP, getting the feelers out there a little bit. And it's kind of just, at the moment, a case of getting that to the ears that you want it to get to, which, you know, itself is quite a challenge, just navigating through all of the various social media and finding a way that, you know, you can get the music to people, offer it to them without, you know, hounding them about it. So that, yeah, for now we're focusing on that. But yeah, we certainly plan on continuing to do more of it. We've done a few of these kind of little, working on some sort of improv-y type session things now, where we're doing stuff that's literally done in the studio there and then. So we've got a few of these kind of little clips and ideas that we've done. And then we'll probably just sort of work now towards a second EP, and then possibly then think about maybe expanding to a kind of longer disc, or maybe an album or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just for now, just focusing again on what we've kind of just brought out, and then and working towards maybe something short again.
So where can we find this to listen / can you buy it as well?
You can buy it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of everywhere. It's on all of the usual places. So you can, I mean, Spotify, probably the most accessible one, I guess, just on there. And you just type in Hema.
Yeah.
Or you can go to hemamusic.com. We just kind of made a very basic little website, but that has the links to everywhere. So you can find it on, from there, you can find it on, you know, Apple Music and iTunes and all of the other various places. And of course, we have the usual social media places as well. So those clips I was talking about, the kind of improv minute clips and stuff, are all going to be released through our Instagram and Facebook pages. So that would be, and that's the place to find us for any news of new releases and stuff like that as well.
Amazing. Well, Rich, let's get out of here. I'm going to press play on The Calling.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the old jam.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, mate, it's been a pleasure. Anything else you guys want to talk about in the ending, or shall I just steam into it?
Yeah, or should we do that thing pretending as if we've heard the episode?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do.
Alright, cool. What did you talk about?
Let's pretend like we heard it, and we talked about... What did we talk
Rob wasn't there present when he was doing it, were you, really?
Sometimes it is a struggle, but this episode was really... this one was really fun. I just can't remember anything. It was only 4 days ago.
I'll tell you, do that joking around with the mixing up between him and the piano player, Rich Jones.
That's such a good idea.
Actually, you know, there's a guitar player in Wales called Richard Jones as well, so it's kind of...
There's a magician called Richard Jones.
This is absolute madness.
Cool, we've got some material here. Yeah.
All right, well, let's roll with this. So,
a rarity.
Cool.
A rarity. we've got the opportunity to clarify right now that there are two jazz musicians named Richard Jones. One of whom I've mistakenly claimed, like, before... Oh, you know what? I can't even tell this story. It's so complicated. There's a Rich Jones in London who plays violin, and there's a Rich Jones in Manchester who plays piano. But the Rich Jones who I knew in Manchester that plays piano studied classical violin at the Northern. So getting the two intertwined is terrifyingly easy.
Yeah. And then I know Rich Jones from Cardiff, who's a guitar player, who taught the Royal Welsh.
Oh, wow.
Big
time established Rich Jones drop.
So that's our Rich Jones count up to 3 now.
Yeah, Dan, tell us about your Rich Jones.
Sorry, he won Britain's Got Talent. He's a magician. He was in the army, wasn't he? Do you remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, he's also a Richard Jones.
Wow, cool.
There you go.
Cool. Well, next week we're going to talk. I'm actually not sure. There's like 2 or 3 shows, some of which.
Can we get Gareth Lecrae on?
Yes, Dan. Should
That's
we just drop
it? Just here.
Maybe we should do that for 100.
Yes, you should.
Feels good. Gareth, in case you're not abundantly aware, his music's on in the background right now. He is the official only music of the Jazz Podcast.
Or maybe, Bob, we get Gareth for 99, and then we get you for 100.
Well, Dan, now we're talking.
What do you think?
I like that a lot. I've been pining to tell. Also, I am on Hugh's podcast if you want to go and check out the back.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So that's episode 10, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Sweet. There are 23 episodes.
Struggling for guests already, then, are we, Hugh?
Yeah. No, it's a good one. I like that episode with Rob. It's cool. But tell you, we'll have to do another crossover at some point.
I think we're doing one right now.
We are, yeah. I'll tell you what we should do for episode 100. We should do a road show. Like old school 80s road show, like the end of the Alan Partridge film.
Yeah. Dan, you've always been quite into the idea of, you know, having an audience, selling some tickets.
Just having an audience would be great, wouldn't it?
I've got something for you boys before we leave. I did the maths this week. In the last 7 days, statistically, there are 7.4 people listening to the Jazz Podcast around the clock.
Wow.
24/7.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's if you want to look at the listenership that way, then, you know, in the time that we've recorded this, 7.4 people have also listened to old shows.
There you go. And how many people are there in the world?
Okay, Dan, don't think of it that way.
We are getting around.
We're spreading like treacle, the Jazz Podcast.
Yeah. But isn't there like a statistic with, what's that Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon? Apparently, there's always someone listening to it in the world.
Wow.
At one time.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. But yeah, I guess if you've got 7.4 of those people listening to the podcast, it's all good.
Yeah. 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 God damn it. We're doing great.
Are there more people listening to our jazz podcast than listening to Pink Floyd? Is that what you're saying?
Well, let's say yes, because it would make a better story, wouldn't it?
I highly doubt that.
Yeah, so do I, to be fair. But I'd like to imagine it's true.
Yeah. I love that. That's how this show runs. We like to imagine what the listenership might be and then advertise it based on those questionable facts.
On repeat.
Wow. Yes, so gentlemen, it's been an enormous pleasure. Thank you.
Totally. Thank
Hugh Williams, Dan Fan.
Thanks for letting me jump in, man. Pleasure.
Right, it's a joy to hear your beautiful voice.
Both of you guys as well. Yeah.
Yeah, Dan. Nice work.
Always. Right. Ciao.